fear holds us back from a greatness often. It's just a reflex, right? It's a defense mechanism. And I say this in a couple of different places, that fear looks like this giant scary monster looming over us, right? I mean, standing in the corner ready to pounce on us at any time. And we're kind of terrified of that. But what I found is, like, anytime I've ever pushed back against the fears that I have, it has backed down every single time.
Welcome to the Creative Chats Podcast with Mike Brennan. Welcome, friends, to another episode of Creative Chats. It's the podcast for artist makers and content creators, where we talk about creativity, the creative process, and story. Thank you so much for tuning in to this week's episode. I am your host, Mike Brennan. If this is the first time you're joining us, welcome. I love having these chats, and I love sharing these chats, because I know that there's so much value in these conversations. We're all on some kind of journey, and we all need something. We all need information that other people have. We can all learn from experiences other people have had, and just also sometimes realize that we're not the only ones who are experiencing some of the things that we're experiencing. As creative people, sometimes we think our issues, our problems are unique. Sometimes we get plagued with that whole thing of wanting to be so unique in our craft, so unique in our creativity, that we shackle our problems and our issues and our experiences with that same uniqueness. And it's through conversations like the ones that I'm about to have right now that we find that, you know what, we actually have a lot of the same experiences and we can learn from each other. So I hope that no matter where you are in your creative journey, whether you're someone who's just starting out, you're trying to explore, you're trying to figure out what that creative expression looks like for you, or maybe you're someone who's been doing some kind of creativity for a while and you're looking for making a shift. You're looking to move into a space where you can do this for a living. You're tired of kind of doing it in the margins and the sidelines. You're more passionate about it. And maybe you have a day job that you're just kind of dreading. And you're like, it's time. It's time for me to move into this more fully. But you're maybe not sure how. Well, I got news for you. Today's talk, today's chat is going to be so very vital for you. My guest today is Dave Connery. Now, I've known Dave online for a number of years. This is the first time we actually have spoken and met and had a conversation. So I was really excited about it for a couple of reasons. One, Dave is a fellow graphic designer, and so we geek out about some of that stuff. And so, listen, just fair warning, I realize that not all of you care about graphic design, nor graphic designers who are kind of famous in the design world. You don't care about some of the ins and outs of that stuff. But I really want to encourage you, move past the specifics of that, if that's not your world, and listen to the conversation for the journey, for the wisdom that is there. Dave is someone who, again, he's a graphic designer. He was an art director and moved even on his own journey into more personal art for himself. We've had very similar journeys where there's been a lot of exploration. There's been a lot of searching and trying to figure out, like, how do I express my creativity, not just in graphic design, but in something more traditional, something more personal even? How do I express some thoughts and ideas and messages that I want to in this format? And what does that look like? And how do I show up online? And how do I engage with people? And so all these kind of questions, all these points that we can wrestle over, I've wrestled over these many times in my past. And to some extent, you know, there's still some experimentation and trying things and iterations that happen. Well, we get into that conversation today with Dave. He shares about his journey. He shares about his art, what has influenced him, where his ideas come from. And I also ask him about his experience from going from one creative expression as far as his full-time job, you know, being an art director, and feeling this pang inside going, you know what, though? I need something else. There's something more there. and wanting to shift and pivot and asking him, how do you do that? How did he do that? I know how I've done that. And maybe you are in a place right now where you need that information. You feel like you need to make a shift. You want to pursue something, maybe full time. You want to make a career of your creativity. And this conversation is just going to be so valuable to you. So I know you're going to love this conversation with Dave Connery. I'm going to get out of the way. And here we go. Let's dive in. Well, hey, Dave, welcome to the show. I'm so excited to finally connect with you in person.
Yeah, I know. It was like we've known each other for at least on social media and Facebook and whatnot for a couple of years now, at least, you know. And
yeah.
Like, yeah, now first time face to face. This is happening a lot lately.
Yes, absolutely. And that's actually, you know, I like it because it's one of the benefits, you know. I think the first time I came across you actually was because of one of your books. I don't remember the title of it, but I remember it had the donuts on it. It was one of your, I think your ebooks through Amazon.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I remember that. Yeah. It was like it was something like a teaser I had for.
Yeah. Right. And just offering some resources and some, just some ideas and stuff. And so I think that was my very first introduction to you,
way back.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you had a podcast at one point too, and you've had just different things that you've been exploring over the years. And we both have the common ground of graphic design as well. So, you know, definitely been tracking with your journey and, there's probably a lot of overlap in our experiences. So I'm excited to get into some of that today.
Yeah, right on. Me too.
So just for the sake of our listeners, give us a little bit of, you know, greatest hits. Who's Dave? What do you do? What's your story?
Well, like you said, I am an artist designer based here in Southern California. And, you know, I've just kind of been, the short story is that basically I was a professional designer, art director for many, many years. There was a period while I was there working as a magazine art director where the production level of stuff had kind of overtaken the creative level of stuff. And so I decided that it was time for me to kind of make sure I didn't lose the creative edge. And so I started painting just as a hobby. And at a certain point, I started to talk to other people about it. And as I started to talk to other people, people got really kind of motivated. But when I would talk about my work, like my creativity, or when I would try to sell things, and they just kind of became a thing, like where people would come to me for advice about this stuff, or they would just want to talk with me about it. And so I was like, well, I better capitalize on this. So I started a couple of websites, you know, at various times doing different things regarding that. And I thought to myself, and this was 2013, I said, you know what, I'm ready to go. I want to do this full time, right? And I'm going to save my money for the rest of 2013. And I'm just going to bank on, you know, leaving in 2014. And man plans and God laughs, right? And May of 2013, late May, they basically, the group that I worked in within the large corporation had been sold off to a different company, and they weren't taking any of the art directors or any of the low-level managers, editors rather. And so they laid off everybody. And I mean, I could have gone to the other job, but it would have been like another hour commute. And I was just like, I'm just not doing that. So I took the severance, and then I was like, okay, well, I guess we're doing this now, right? You know, at least I had that buffer, that big severance. And so then ever since then, I've just been, number one, making stuff. Number two, experimenting, like you said, on a lot of different things, whether it's different social platforms, different, you know, production, whether it's YouTube or podcasts or whatever, and just really kind of diving deep into all the creative stuff, you know, whether it's design oriented or it's stuff for myself or for clients, or even, you know, just a lot of stuff on canvas or other items.
Yeah. I love that. And we're going to get into a little bit more of that. Before we get too deep, I always love to start with the question of asking about people's childhood. And just, is there a time maybe when you were a kid that you remember very vividly that spoke to you and said, this lets me know that I'm a creative person?
Yes. So it's kind of like, man, it's a little bit of a double-edged sword on that, because yes, there were times like that. In fact, there's one in particular. There was a thing we did in schools here, and I don't know how many other people did them. I'm sure they were nationwide, across the US, maybe other places, but it was called the the Newbery Awards or something like that. And basically it was like children writing books and then getting awarded for, you know, like submitting them to get awarded for this Newbery Prize. And we did it as a class a couple of different times. And my teacher and my mom always says, oh, you're such a great writer. You're such a good artist, right? So I did an illustrated book. And my teacher said, oh, it was really great. I can't wait to submit it. Nothing ever happened of it, but it was just like this encouragement. And it was probably maybe fourth or fifth grade, you know, and looking back on it, I still have it up in a crate up there in the rafters. But looking back on it, it was like, oh my gosh. Right.
Yeah.
It's like, what were you thinking? Like, but anyway, I mean, you're 10 years old or 9 years old or whatever. But that was probably a genesis moment for me where I really realized that there was something creatively impulsive in me. The thing about it, though, is that I pushed back on it a lot, especially because my mom would always tell me, oh, you're so creative. You should be an artist. You should be a writer. You should do these things. And it's like, you should. Coming from your parents, it's like, I'm not doing that.
Yeah. Right?
And I would do it for myself, but I never really wanted to practice it with any kind of, you know, reverence or anything like that. I took the art classes in school because they were the easy classes, right? And I knew I could do well, you know. And was I an exceptional artist? No, but I knew it was something I could do well. It would be easy, and it was easy A, right? But it wasn't until, I mean, I really didn't hit my clear cut moment of it until almost late 20s, early mid to late 20s is when it really hit that stride. So yeah, my childhood was kind of mixed up.
Yeah. Well, in that, did you end up going to art school, or you just pursued this kind of on your own track?
No, at first I was undecided about where I wanted to go to school. So my parents weren't going to pay for me to go to a 4-year right away, right out of the gate. So I went to a junior college and I took some art classes and I took some other stuff. And I remember taking writing and some philosophy classes, actually. And there was this kind of juncture point of those two things. It's kind of a weird thing, but they're creative writing and then what's the course? Logic, right? Logic is a class, right? There was this juxtapoint of these two things. And then when I was talking to one of my professors about it, he said, oh yeah, you know, that's usually, you know, we start to figure out these right relationships. And that's what a lot of great ad managers do, right? I'm like, ad managers, what is that, right? So we started talking about this whole marketing side of things. And he said, well, yeah, like a lot of marketing people or people who become, you know, copywriters or whatever, you know, like that's what, you know, this, that whole process. I'm like, oh, so I started looking at that and I went and started diving deeper into marketing. And that's kind of where I started to go. So jump ahead a few years, I end up going to University of Texas for marketing. And I go and get a job as a low level marketing grunt, basically, at this direct marketing company. And I hate it. I hate every single minute of it. It's like the worst thing ever, right? I was like, if this is marketing, I don't want to have anything to do with this. And so I bail out of that and I go be a bartender. And it was actually like, it was funny because I was, I had more fun and met and got more creative input from people as a bartender than I did ever working for a marketing company. But then I started to notice something about my normal, regular, everyday interests is that I would be like, I'd go to a bookstore and I would always gravitate towards these design-oriented magazines or like, say, airbrush magazines or painting magazines. I would gravitate toward these things as an interest. And it didn't like, I just, especially when it comes to design, it's like I never made that equation right there out of the gate. It was just like, what is this? How can I be part of this? Right? How can I do this thing? And then I don't exactly remember who was it that told me about it, but somebody shared, oh, you like design, you should check out Quark Express, which back then was the premier, you know, page layout program.
Yeah.
And so she gave me a bootleg copy of Quark Express and I opened it up. I'm like, I have no idea what I'm doing. I don't even know. I have no idea what I'm doing, right? You know, I've messed around with like Corel Draw and stuff like that, but I had no, like Quark Express made no sense to me because I, you know, it was just like opening it up with no instruction. We didn't have YouTube back then, like how to do Quark Express. No, the internet was there, but it wasn't that like that yet. So I put it away, moved back to California, and was just talking with I think it was a friend of my mom's or something, and he was like talking to me. I was telling him about the graphic design stuff, you know, like my interest in it, and he was like explaining it to me, or he's like, I was explaining my interest in this stuff that I didn't know what it was technically called, and he said, oh, it's graphic design. And then he kind of like, he was a little bit of an early mentor for me. I went back to school, more of a trade school for design, and did that for a couple of years, and then, you know, that just kind of started me on my way, right? I got fully invested at that point.
Yeah. I love that you kept listening to that voice in you going like, there's another step here. There's something else to explore. There's something else to step into. And you didn't let circumstances or one particular job derail you in that. And you just, you know, you kept at it. And I see that even today in the things that you're doing, there's this tenacity, I think, that you have, that's really important as an artist, as I'm sure you can attest to as well. And so design wise, like, what is it that you were really drawn to with that? Like, who were the influences and like, what was the type of design that really spoke to you?
So when I was younger, before I really knew what design was, I loved magazines like Surfer and Surfing Magazine. I would read those a lot, you know, growing up in Southern California was kind of our thing. Skateboarding Magazine, Transworld, yeah. Skateboarding Magazine. And then, you know, would always like feverishly consume, like rock and roll magazines. And one of those was Ray Gun Magazine. Mm-hmm. And, I was just like, when you looked at Ray Gun back then, it was just like, what is this? Like, what is going on with this magazine? This is like so cool. Right. I don't get it. I don't like, I can't even read the story, but yeah. Like, I can't even follow what's going on, but it's just so rad that it was just like, I just love that. And I didn't really know, like, I didn't have the presence of mind to go into the masthead and see, oh, the art director. Oh, that's who's responsible for this. I didn't know who that was. I was just like, oh, these people, there's names. Ah, yeah. I just liked the magazine. And so there was that. And then there was, as I got into design, I started being introduced, like one of my teachers from the trade school was actually instrumental in teaching me about typography. And I really got this kind of feel for typography. So he introduced me to Charles S. Anderson. He introduced me to Rudy Vanderlands from Emigre Magazine and the typefaces they designed. And then I just kind of like took those early influences and I started just kind of like branching out. I started looking at the genealogy, right? The family tree from that point forward. And that's when I found David Carson. And that's when I found Rick Poynier and some of these old school guys, right? I can't think of his name, but he started a type founder called T22. And I can't think of his name off the top of my head, but he, you know, some of these guys that were just like, they were really pushing type back then. And I was like, this is so rad, right? There's a guy I follow on Instagram named Chris Ashworth. I have to always say it slowly because it always comes out weird if I say it fast. Chris Ashworth, who was the art director on Ray Gun after Carson left. Hmm. And he kind of picked up the ball a little bit cleaner, but still had that same kind of real kind of quote unquote grunge effect to his work. And so him and then guys like James Victori, who was more of like a poster designer. And what I liked most about him is that he was like raw. Like James was really raw, right? I mean, it was literally like scribbles on a big poster and put that up. And then you're like in the Museum of Modern Art. Like,
yeah.
Like, wow. Right. Like, so it was like giving me permission to do great design and not really caring like how perfectly, you know, centered and weighted and how the lines lined up, right? And you didn't have the right amount of white space and your typography wasn't just so, right? And like, right? Yeah. So it gave me the permission to do that. So yeah, those were kind of like the main guys in the early part of my life. So, and really they're the ones I look to still, honestly. But
yeah. Yeah. Well, and it's interesting because even if somebody's listening right now and they're like, dude, I have no idea who these people are. I'm not a designer. That's not my background. There's still this thread of figuring things out, playing, experimenting, guys who are and ladies who are looking to not just follow the rule book, but like figure out what can I do to inject some play and some spontaneity into some things, to express and to push the boundaries of what's been done and what I've done. And those are the people who I think continue to really lean into that stuff. And so I always appreciated that. And I think there's also a little bit of like rebellion in there, you know, this kind of like, yeah, like I understand this is maybe what is the norm, but I'm going to fly off and kind of do my thing over here and see what happens. And that's where I think you can really hit on some things that can either be groundbreaking or really different and can even be a connector to something else that comes, another iteration, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you're in the design world and you're, as you said, you were, before you were at this place and it was starting to dissolve and then you're like, okay, I'm going out on my own. Can you talk a little bit about that experience and just your thoughts and feelings around that time? Because I think a lot of people might be in that place right now where they're like, you know, I've got this thing that I'm doing. I don't really love it. I want to transition or pivot into something else. It's kind of scary. I'm not really sure how to do that. And I know that there needs to be something that happens, a move, but how do I do that successfully? Or where do I even begin to think about that? You know?
Yeah. I mean, my wife is dealing with this a little bit right now. She's on a temporary furlough, and it's frustrating for her. And she's trying to figure out, like, she doesn't know. There's no answers being given about whether she's actually going to get pulled back in or they're going to be severanced, right? And she's asking me almost on a daily basis, like, well, where do I go, right? And she's a highly successful executive with, you know, large hospitality brand. And I have no doubt she's going to find something because she's just good at what she does. I mean, she is like one of my biggest heroes when it comes to work ethic. Right. But she's just like, it's just something she's never been addressed, you know, never had to address. It's never something she's never been confronted with. And the insecurity of it, you know, kind of almost, you know, it kind of gravitates to me a little bit, but I just, like, I know in my heart that she'll find something and she just has to kind of have that faith and until just start looking, right? Just start looking at these things and start like, find, like, you may not make it back into hospitality, but find out how your skill set transcends into other places that be of interest, right? Like, where would you want to work if you're going to find something new? What is the new project you want to do? And start diving into that. Nobody's saying you have to commit to anything, but go look at it. You know, a friend of mine said he wanted to, after he got laid off, same company, he said, oh, I was thinking about going to be a barber. I'm like, well, go, right? Go, just go look at it. Go look at what it takes, how far you can get, right? I haven't talked to that guy in a long time, so I don't know how far he went with that, but it really, here's the thing about fear, Mike, that I've discovered, which is, I think, what holds a lot of people back. Everything is scary in moments like this. And I think that fear holds us back from a greatness often. It's just a reflex, right? It's a defense mechanism. And I say this in a couple of different places, that fear looks like this giant, scary monster looming over us, right? I mean, standing in the corner, ready to pounce on us at any time. And we're kind of terrified of that. But what I found is, like, anytime I've ever pushed back against the fears that I have, it is backed down every single time. Every single time I push back against any fear, it knocks down every single time, right? New fears always populate, right? They always come back, right? Yeah. But, you know, it's like, if you're, oh, I'm afraid of what my friends will think. Like, well, if they're your real friends, they're going to be supportive, right? You know, hopefully, right? Hopefully, right? It doesn't always happen that way, right? Sometimes they just want to be protective of you too, but you push back against that and you show that I'm interested. I'm truly interested. I want to keep going. You dive deep and dive deep. And then you might find out that it's not the thing you want, but it led you to something else. Like, you know, back when I was trying to figure out where I was going next, I was like looking at like art magazines and like commercial art and illustrative stuff. And like airbrushing, I wanted to airbrush like helmets and motorcycles and stuff like that. And when I started to talk to people about that more, it was just like, God, this doesn't sound as fun as it looks. It looks way better than it sounds, right? And so that's why I kind of deviated from that. But I kind of just kept digging, and I started talking to artists. I started talking to different people who were doing the job. And I said, like, what's a realistic situation of that, right? And probably to the pain, you know, of some of these people, because I asked too many questions. So I don't know. I guess it's just really, if you're trying to look to do anything, just figure out what will get you to that goal, or at least get you started in that goal, and just start digging, start looking into it and doing your investigation, and then take steps forward. You know, the more you enjoy, the more you need to push forward. And when you push forward, you'll find out that the thing that was on the other side of that big hairy monster isn't as scary as you thought it would be.
Yeah. And I think too many times we want something that's like a sure thing. And there are no sure things. And even when we think that we understand, or we think we've planned enough, as you mentioned before, even, you know, you make all the plans in the world and then you set out on something and things happen. It's how you respond and adapt in the situation that will really help shape you as far as where you go and what you do.
Yeah.
Because I think, you know, and I'm sure you probably experienced this as well, but there's so much that changes constantly, and you're always having to adapt and figure out the next iteration of something, or figure out, even if it's not an external thing, there's an internal thing of, as an artist, as a creative person, I want to continue to grow. I want to continue to express myself and figure out what I want to say, how I want to say it, what the market needs at this point, where there's overlap in those things. And so all that stuff that's constantly happening all the time, causing you to try things and experiment and see what happens and learn from the failures and all that stuff, and keep, you know, just making more stuff, right?
Yeah.
What out of the things that you have done over, you know, through that iteration process, what are some of the takeaways for you in that? Like, what are the big learnings for you? Even if you created something where you're like, this was good for a moment or a season, but it was a pass through, or it didn't really land. Like, are there any, you know, insights that you can share with us?
Yeah. You know, well, okay. So yeah, again, be fearless in that, right? Be fearless and be okay with what happens. You may be super inspired to like, oh, I want to paint, you know, skulls and roses, which is a kind of a thing that I was into and then got pulled back into. But then after a time, it was just like, oh, I did that, and now I want to move on to something else, right? But it tends to relate to people, and so I got pulled back into it. But I'm not so concerned about like leaving that, saying, okay, it was a series, right? Especially when it comes to art, right? Everything is a series. Yeah. I did the 100-day challenge. I don't know if you've ever done it.
Yeah.
April, whatever, it usually starts. And 100-day challenge, we do 100 straight days of one particular thing. And I wanted to learn how to better draw people, right? Because I'd never really done it, right? So I just wanted to draw faces. And it ended up becoming like 100 powerful women, you know, right? Like the idea was like strong women. And so I started doing that. And at the end of it, I was like, I'm probably not going to paint any more women, right? I did this thing, and I got really kind of like, it was hard work, and I learned a lot about myself, and I learned about like my own technique. But really, it wasn't about me necessarily learning how to draw women, but rather how to be okay with whatever happens, right? Because every single day I was learning something new, and sometimes it was good, sometimes it was bad. You see these guys that say, just practice every single day and you'll get better every single day. You look at my 100-day project and like, okay, not bad, pretty good, getting better. Oh, what happened there? Right? Oh, oh, that was good. Oh, that's great. Oh, that one's amazing. Ah, what? that was my process the entire way through, all the way to the very end. But if you looked at the whole series of it from start to finish, like, you really start to see some interesting elements that I still use in a lot of my work now, right? Like the process, the style that I decided to try to incorporate into each one, I've been using that into the stuff that I do now. So I learned something from it for sure. There was another point I was going to make. I said, this is a personal thing. Something I have learned from personal experience is that I try not to wave my flag about anything that I'm doing. Like I try not to say, guess what I'm going to start doing, and I'm going to do these, and I'm going to do them forever. Right. Because every single time I've done that, like, I've done them for a bit, and then, like, I'm not doing that for a bit. Right. So I no longer say, well, I'm going to incorporate these things into my work, and it's going to become a thing for 5 minutes, and then I'm going to forget it and then go do something else. Right. So I try not to grandstand about it. I just do it and see what it is. And if people like it, cool. If I enjoy it, great. And if I don't enjoy it, I can just move on. And if people ask, I'll say, oh, it was just something I did for a little bit. Right. Be okay with that.
Yeah. How much of that do you think is there, like, that you get bored of a certain thing versus you realize that it's a bridge to something else? You know what I mean? Because those are two different things, right?
Yes. Yeah. You know, it's funny because I was going through one of my old sketchbooks. I had this old sketchbook, and there was this stretch there where I was just kind of doing just random things. A lot of times what I'll do is, like, for some of my YouTube covers, I'll hand letter something, I'll do a hand lettering like this, and I'll kind of integrate that as one of the cards in my YouTube. And I would use this book for that. And then I'd illustrate little things and stuff. And at the time there was a lot of, like, me doing that. Oh, I'm going to do a lot of Skull and Roses. I liked ravens a lot. I'm going to try and learn how to draw ravens. Right. I've always liked that. Right. I'm very dark, very Edgar Allan Poe of me. Right. So I was doing it all. And I was just like, maybe not. Right. But as I went back through this, I thought to myself, I looked at it, like, a lot of what I did there, I still do now. And then looking back on this now is, like, some of this stuff is actually really cool. And I could bring it back into, like, especially the design stuff, scan it, put it into something really easily. And I think there does tend to be, I wouldn't call it so much boredom, but rather the muse shifts. Right? It shifts. It changes direction a little bit and needs attention in a different way. Mm. But I have no problem necessarily going back to it if it feels right, right? If it doesn't feel forced. And so when somebody came to me earlier this year and said they wanted two small commissions done with the Skull and Roses stuff, I was like, okay. Yeah, no problem. I'd be happy to do that. I have to practice my skulls again, right? Practice my roses. I mean, they're super loose, so they're not that tough. But, you know, it felt just as natural and easy to get into. And then it became, like, then I did this on a hat. This hat, I made this hat for myself because I have I'm in the studio. I'm messy in my studio. And I tend to do this thing without the hat, right? Right, I got paint on the hands, and then I do this, right? So I was like, I have a studio hat specifically so I don't put paint all through my hair. And I've been on TikTok a lot and places, and some people kept saying, where do you get that? Did you make that hat? I need a hat like that. And they kept saying it. I'm like, fine, I'll make you a hat. So I made a hat, and then I sold that one hat, and then somebody else said, I want one too. And then that became a thing. And just because this simple design, and I don't know if this is video or just audio, but basically I just have a hat that, if you're just listening to the audio, it's like, it's a skull with the words doing work, which is kind of like a catchphrase for me, written in kind of like very just like hand lettered script with a little spray paint on it, kind of very graffiti-esque, if you will. But people wanted that, and I was just like, okay, I'm diving into that, right? It's super simple. I can knock these out all day long. And so I don't have a problem indulging that. No problem.
Yeah. It's funny how sometimes you can think that you're like, oh, this is it. This is the thing. I'm going to put it out there. It's going to resonate with people. It's going to take off. You do that and it's like nothing, right? Crickets. Yeah. And then something else that you didn't even intend necessarily, someone goes, hey, I really like that. And then word starts to grow in that. And then people come to you and say, I want more of that. I want more of that. So there's always this balance and this dance to learn as well, because then I think if you're like me, there's a part of you that goes, okay, good. Like, I'm happy to do that, but I also don't want to get pigeonholed into just doing that. I want to make sure that I'm pushing into new things as well. And figuring out what is that next thing for me that I can maybe take what I learned from this project and this project and this project and now bring it in together for something new, kind of recycling some parts, if you will, to make a new creation. You know, that's there's something exciting about that, you know?
Yeah. Well, and I appreciate that about you too, Mike, because when I look at your work, whether I see it on Instagram or whatnot, like you really, like, you know, even look at the work that's on the wall behind you, the diversity, the prolific aspects of what you're doing, yeah, I appreciate a lot, because some of your stuff will be super loose and raw, but good. And like, just like super expressive. And then some other stuff will be more tight and pulled together, more illustrative in nature, or, you know, or hand painted like you have back there. And it's just like that being okay with sharing that in, you know, as like people need to be okay with you saying, showing whatever you're going to show, because that's who you are as an artist.
Yeah.
You know, I'm cool with that. And I love that. And, you know, and it also inspires me too, because it's like, I feel better about it because I'm the same way. Right. Yeah. And there's so many people, especially on Instagram can be a great thing, but it can also be a curse, because there's so many people on there who just only show their picture perfect work all the time. And I think that that's, you know, now in retrospect, that's a mistake, right? Because I felt like I did that. I tried to do that far too often, and it probably would have been a lot further along had I just shared who I was as an artist, period. I would have felt better about myself. Maybe more people would have been pulled to me because they saw that I was just like, no holds barred, going to show up the way I'm supposed to show up.
Yeah. And you know, that's, it's definitely a challenge to do that, because for me, it started out with, you know, I was doing a daily drawing or painting and I was like, okay, I need some accountability. So I'm going to post it online. And if I stop posting something, somebody's going to say, hey, what's up? Where's today's? And so that was a little bit of built-in reasoning for me earlier on. And then I just kind of kept going with that. And so it was like, you know, I just passed 8 years of daily consecutive art. And as you do that, you just keep showing up. You just keep putting more stuff out there. There's a freedom to knowing that if you do something that's not so great today, tomorrow you can wake up and do something else. And you're not shackled with what I call the masterpiece mentality, which I think a lot of artists fall for that myth, which is the thinking of like, I'm going to sit down in one session, bang something out that's going to be my masterpiece. And it's so front loaded with pressure that it can be crippling. And people then just go like, I don't even know if I can really enter into my creativity the way I need to. And then thinking about, well, then after I create it, I have to post it. And then what am I going to say about it? Or how am I going to position it? Or, and that whole process thing too. So, you know, I really try and encourage people. I'm like, just share what you're doing and share the good stuff, the bad stuff, be real. Yeah. Because I think when you don't, you're only showing that little sliver, which doesn't help you. And it doesn't help other people, right? Because so many other artists are falling into that. Well, you know, look what they did. They only have this great work, whatever. But even the masters had dogs, you know, even they had moments where they were like, this is horrible, you know, painting over things, using the other side of something, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
But yet nobody really talks about that stuff. And so I really like shining a light on that, as uncomfortable as that can be sometimes, because I think it really helps level the playing field a little bit more and makes things accessible for people and realize that they can show up no matter where they're at right now today, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree 100%. And you, again, you, as a designer, I'm sure you've been embraced with, or this idea is that, you submit three ideas to a client, right? And the one you love the most is the one they hate the most. The one you hate the most, the one they love the most, right? It never fails, right? Like, wow, you picked that one? Like, okay, all right. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, but, you know, people will reach out about certain pieces of my art going like, that's the one you like? Like, of all the things that I've done lately, that's what you picked? Like, okay, you know, like, you know, so it's, you never know how you're going to hit with somebody else or what's going to strike somebody in a certain way. And so even though you may not feel that you did the best work, it might have a resonance with somebody on a different level that you just can't contemplate. Yeah. So stop being fearful of that, right? I mean, that sketchbook that I just, you know, showed here to the people who were listening audio that couldn't see a thing, you know, going back through that, you know, because that is from that same era, I think, of when I did the 100 Day Project. Going back through that, it's just like, wow, you know, like this, I could see how people who are liking some of the things that I'm doing now would like some of that stuff, really, like it would just easily just fit right in. And so I'm just basically, as we were actually talking here just now, I was like thinking to myself, like, oh, I'm going to start doing more from the archive stuff where take a picture, put that up on Instagram, right? Just say, hey, look at this thing from the archive that I did, right?
Yeah.
Just to see, you know, see where it's at. Cause you never know. I might turn that into a t-shirt or something at some point. You never know.
Yeah. Well, and also it helps people have context for you as an artist to say, oh, here's where Dave was coming from. Here's some of his background. Here's some of the things that he was interested in, even back at that point in which he created that. And then to even see, well, how does that inform what he's doing right now? Mm-hmm. So there is a little bit more of a complete picture as opposed to just, hey, I did this, you know, last week and this is it. You know, it lets people into your world a little bit more, which I think is cool.
Yeah, for sure.
So when you get ideas, and I think I know the answer to this, but I'm going to ask it anyway. When you get an idea, what is your process for putting that into action? Are you someone who's more get in, figure it out as you go? Or are you a little more methodical with research and, you know, doing some homework ahead of time and then stepping out with a laid out plan? Or is it a mix of both?
There's definitely a bit of a mix, right? Because I definitely want, especially if it's something that I have limited knowledge on, right? Like, let's say, for instance, I don't paint in oil, but if I said to myself, I want to learn how to paint in oil, right? I wouldn't just go buy a bunch of oil paints today and then go like, we're going in, right? I would do a little bit of initial research just so, number one, I've got way too many art supplies as it is. The last thing I need is more extra art supplies than I really, really need. So find out what are the basics, right? What are the basic supplies that I need just to get started? What, you know, what types of like the mediums that go with it do I need? You know, what are the best brushes for a beginner oil painter? Because I've got a ton, but they're all acrylic brushes, those stuff like that. Just the kind of like the ground level, you know, like you go to Life Drawing 101 and they give you that list of like, these are the things you'll need. And
yeah,
most of them, some of them you may or may not need, but you know, here's what you go to the art store, go do that, right? Figure that out. So if I did that, then yeah, I would do a little bit of research and then I would bring it home and then I would just go. I would just go and try to figure it out. Another example is I got a tablet, like a drawing tablet the other day. And I haven't used one since early days of my design career, and I didn't really like it back then, but I've said, I'm going to try it because I want it, because I'm doing a lot more hand lettering stuff and just kind of more illustrative stuff just to kind of bring out that side into my design work, bring the artistic stuff into my design. And I really, a lot of times right now, I'm just like, I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm just going forward, you know. And then I learned a little bit and it was like, how do I control the brush or like what, like, or the stylus? Like the stylus doesn't seem to be quite thing. So I'll go dive into figuring that out. And then I'll come back and then just start experimenting. Right. Because that's, to me, because I've had a lot of experience with the design side of things and with some of the creative stuff or the artistic stuff, is that I have less fear. And so diving in is easier, right? I I've been to a similar cliff like this. I know by the color of the water that the water is deep enough for me to dive into. It doesn't look like from here. It doesn't look like there's any rocks. I'm going, right? If I've never been to this area, the water's a little cloudy. I might go down there and take a look first and before I do it. And then if I like, okay, it looks safe, I'm going to dive in from here and then just check and then go up to the cliff and dive in, right?
Yeah. Right?
So I don't know. I guess so I mix it up. The fast way around that question is I definitely mix it up, but I lean more toward the jumping. Yeah. You know, a little bit of apprehension, but then jump.
And I think if you're like me in this regard too, that helps build your instincts and your gut so that you can rely on that more and get into something quicker without having to pause and analyze so much and kind of let room for that fear to start creeping in some of those voices. Because if you act quickly, there's not as much time for that stuff to happen, you know, because right. You're ready. You're at the races already. You know, you're there.
Yeah.
And so you talked a little bit about bringing some of your like art, more of the art stuff into the design stuff. And I know obviously from a standpoint of like making mock-ups for your store and design in terms of marketing for your artwork, there's that application. But how else has design influenced your thinking or process when it comes to your actual artwork?
You know, this has actually kind of been an interesting journey for me over the last, at least 18 months, where I'm trying to find the crossroads between these two. Like how, and it's proving difficult, by the way, but but how to go, like how to be able to translate what I do from the design side onto the canvas or from the canvas onto the, into the design side and do that in a way that feels like they both look the same, not the same, but rather they both look like they come from the same artist. Mm. Like, you know, like if you had them displayed on a wall, it would look like a series, right? And you'd have digital stuff here and you'd have canvas stuff over here and it would look like they just cohesive. One thing I've gotten okay with is that they don't have to be exactly, tied perfectly together. They can be close, right? But what I have learned from the artistic, or what I try to bring from the artistic side into the design, is that the looseness, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, and this is what something like giving the, having my, my old, inspirations, like the David Carson, the James Victory, embracing that looseness, right, that they had put into their work and saying that, that it's almost like they're giving me permission to do what I want. And so I got the tablet so that I could do very rough, loose type and mix that with tight, you know, conform type to create this kind of tension between those two things, to bring in brush marks with the tablet that feel relatively, you know, painterly, and then incorporate that with strong graphic shapes and elements and photos and whatnot. And then from the design side, what I'm just doing is like, I'll take something that I create typographically and I'll print it out on paper and then I'll incorporate it into a canvas. I'll literally glue it to the canvas and then paint over it and then kind of tear it apart and bring it, you know, put it in different places. Or I've done this a couple of times where I'll walk the streets. I go for a walk almost every morning. I'll walk the streets and I'll look at the ground around me. I will pick up random pieces of paper or whether, you know, like colored paper or whatever, things that I know will go together and then I can glue together. And then I'll take a piece of watercolor paper and then I'll glue that. But I use my design intellect to kind of incorporate those things together, right? I'm creating the spatial relationship. I'm creating the line and the color and the balance and all that. Maybe I'll bring in something. I'll find the typography in some of those things and I'll use that as an element to kind of create that. So it's like, I'm always trying to bring those things together, color, line, shape, typography into the art, and then bringing the art into all that stuff wherever I can on the, on the digital side.
Yeah, I love that because nothing is wasted from any of your experiences. you can bring all those creative expressions together and let them inform whatever it is that you're currently doing.
Yeah.
Love that. And just, there's a guy who I know who does some digital paintings, and then he'll print them out on like a canvas. And then he'll take like pastels and paints and then do like another layer of work on top of that, so that it's a mix of both this digital illustration painting and more of the old school analog paint. It's really interesting the effects that you can get with that. That's part of that whole play and experiment, see what happens, that I love, you know?
Yeah. Quite a few years ago, I don't remember exactly when it was, I went to a museum and they had a couple of pieces by Shepard Fairey. Are you familiar with Shepard?
Yeah, Fairey? Yeah.
From Obey Giant. And so these were like his artistic pieces, not just graphic posters, but they were, they're a lot of stenciling and then painting on top of it and more stenciling and then some, you know, some incorporated typography or whatnot. And they're super, if you saw a picture of it, you would be missing 90% of the depth that's in there. You might see it, but you wouldn't really you really have to get up close to it to see how deep it was. Like, it just would go on and on and on. And at a distance, you wouldn't be able to tell that. It didn't look like overly, you know, painted, right? It didn't have like all the super texture. It had texture, but it didn't have like this like buildup of texture. It was like these super thin layers, but you could still see all the way through them. And that was probably a moment where I thought to myself, like, wow, this is what it's at. This is where it's at. And so that's what I've always strived to do with a lot of the art stuff, is like building these layers so that when people get up close, they go dive deeper into it and deeper into it and deeper into it, just so they can see like, oh, this is something I didn't see before. It's hanging up on their wall. And they walk past it one day, like, oh, there's a bird in there that I didn't even know was in there before. Or like, oh, there's a word sitting behind that paint. And I like, what does it say? Right. You know, like, and the mystery behind that, you know? So
Yeah, love that. That's awesome. So we're just about at our time, but I want to end with one question. And that is, what is one piece of advice that someone's given to you along the way that's been really instrumental in your creativity and business?
I think it really, you know, I go back to James Victoria on this, and it wasn't something he said to me personally, but it's something he wrote in one of his books. And I'm probably paraphrasing because I was trying to think of it when you told me about this question. But he says something to the degree of, when it comes to artwork, right? You were never entitled to the art. You're only entitled to the work, right? So it's the idea that it doesn't matter what you think you want to get out of it. The art will show up when it's ready to show up. It will be it will be received if it's ready to be received, but you must put in the work in order to get any semblance of that, right? If you want to find that, you have to work, right? So keep working, do the work.
Yeah.
That's what I say to everybody.
Absolutely. And that's a good word.
Yeah.
And everybody go do the work today, show up, be yourself, do the work, put it in. Cause it makes a difference, not only for us, but the people around us, you know, they need what it is that we create too. I talk about that all the time.
Yeah.
So where can people find you? How can they follow you? How can they buy some of your art?
Pretty simple. Just daveconry.com is my website. You can find me most platforms as @DaveConry, except for TikTok. I am on there as @DaveConry, but that's a whole long story about why I don't use that account. So I use Dave Makes Things on TikTok. That's the one that's kind of gotten me a little bit of success there. So
nice.
So find me.
Awesome. Yes. And I encourage listeners, go follow Dave. Make sure that you just keep tabs with him, what he's doing, because he's always creating some really innovative stuff and pushing the boundaries, and love that about him and his work. So Dave, thank you so much for spending this time with us today. And I know that our conversation will be really helpful for those who are in the midst of their own creative struggles, trying to figure out what those next steps are and wanting to push into play as well.
Awesome. Thanks, Mike. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening today. I'd appreciate it if you would subscribe, leave a rating and a review. It really helps this podcast be seen and heard by others.